Welcome to CME Group's podcast series. The information provided is for informational and educational purposes. To view our regulatory disclaimers relating to this podcast, please visit cmegroup.com.
Welcome to the CME Group podcast series focused on managed future strategies. My name is Randy Warsager. I'm recording this on June 18th, 2013. For this interview, it's my pleasure to talk with Michael Stenbaum. Michael's the CEO at RPM, Risk and Portfolio Management, based in Stockholm, Sweden. Michael, welcome and thank you.
Thank you, Randy.
Would you please begin by describing your background and your work at RPM and what RPM does?
Okay. RPM is a Swedish specialist in the CDA and liquid macro space. We have been active since 1993 in constructing and managing multi-manager portfolios for larger institutions and larger distributing banks. My own personal background is that after business school, I ended up at the OM in Stockholm, which is now Nasdaq OMX, as a member of the founding team. And after a couple of years as a management consultant, I ended up in a company as a CEO that was owned by some of the previous owners of OM. And in 1993, we did a partial management buyout where we, myself and my partners, bought out the newly developed CDA fund business that we had developed over a couple of years. And since 1993, we have been essentially doing the same thing. Of course, it's much more advanced now. It's much more technology involved. But the business model remains essentially the same. We build and we manage multi-manager portfolios based on CDAs and liquid macro managers.
All right, thank you. As you know, there's a substantial body of research, much of which we've kind of summarized in our Managed Futures Research Digest, which is available to investors on our website, a substantial body of research on the benefits that managed futures strategies can bring to a portfolio of stocks, bonds, and other hedge fund strategies. Would you please describe your own views and your firm's views on specifically how these strategies benefit a full portfolio like that?
You can answer that question in many ways. But we prefer to use a paradigm that we call crisis alpha. The thing is that managed futures have three sources of return. One source is, of course, a risk-free interest rate. The other source is general classical risk premium that arises from providing liquidity and hedging opportunities for commercial players. And the third source of return is what we call crisis alpha, and that is the return that is generated uniquely by CDAs during periods of market stress. And the reason for that is that during these periods of market stress, like in 2008, markets tend to lose their efficiency. In those periods, CDAs are uniquely positioned to profit from, you might say, inefficient price moves or overreaction in price moves. Since they are systematic, they have no behavioral biases, they are active in the futures markets that are symmetric and going long and going short. And perhaps more importantly, they are responsive. They respond to whatever happens in markets. So if you study CTA returns, you will find that, you know, depending on exactly what subset of CTAs you are analyzing. But over time, this risk premium, the standard neoclassical risk premium, is around 1.52% per annum. And the crisis alpha component is around 4 to 5% annualized over the years. And in addition to that, you have the risk-free interest rate historically. So CDA's ability to effectively diversify a hedge fund portfolio or a long equity or bond portfolio, we believe ultimately stems from the fact that they are systematic and they are active in the futures markets and can respond to inefficient market moves that are most typical in times of market stress.
Thank you. At CME and our educational initiative, we're very keen to help investors understand the long-term implications, the long-term nature of these strategies and how they help. So confronting the last couple of years directly, I typically will ask allocators and managers alike to describe for the listeners what conditions in the markets and the environment in general made it so challenging the last few years for many CTAs, and how you see those conditions evolving. Do you think they're changing? We do see some general conditions changing that are promising. I wanted to ask your view on that.
Yeah, if you ask a trend follower why have return been so weak over the last couple of years, he or she would answer, well, there's a lack of trends. Sustained price trends. But the real question is, why is there a lack of price trends? Some people would answer, well, the quantitative easing and the intervention made by central banks all over the world has sort of stopped many price trends short. And that may be true. Personally, I am more of the opinion that the weaker returns in recent years stems from, one, of course, the fact that we have interest rates close to zero, since that is one important part of returns from CDAs. But CDAs and trend followers in particular, performance is and has been strongly correlated with the business cycle. And you will, if you study the returns from the industry, you will find that any Barclays CDA index or new CDA index will show its strongest returns during pronounced changes in the business cycle. When we move from recession to growth, or if we move from growth to recession. And the difficult period, the give-back periods, typically occur around turning points in the business cycle. Now, the last couple of years has been unique in the way that there has been no changes in the business cycle. It has been, nothing has been going on. If you look at the United States industrial production, you would see that is stuck in a range. If you look at GDP numbers, they are stuck in a range and have been so for quite a number of years. And that is true for the most of the developed world. I think that the main reason is just this. There has been not enough change in terms of growth in the world over the last couple of years. That's the main reason.
Okay, thank you. And I think it's interesting to note in this context that since the end of 2008, in this period of a tougher trading environment and weaker returns, nevertheless, CTA assets under management measured by Barclays Hedge have risen about 60% to $335 billion, which suggests to me that investors, or at least some subset of investors, have come to understand the longer-term nature of these strategies to let them go fully and capture larger market cycles. So I find that number very encouraging. It's bounced around a little bit up here, but it's still in the $335 billion range, which I think is a positive sign. You've mentioned to me a soon-to-be-published study by a professor at the Imperial College of London on hedge fund performance as it relates to AMU size and the age of the program. Would you please talk about that?
Sure. I think that the growth that you mentioned in the CDA in the industry or managed futures is a direct result of the events in 2008. We had a terrible setback in the world equity markets at the same time as CDAs had their best year in decades. Now, we did not see any growth in 2009. That is probably because many hedge fund of funds use CDAs as an ATM, given their liquidity. So they used their CDA investments to pay off investors that were redeeming from the fund of funds. But in 2010, 11, and 12, we saw an increased growth. And I believe that growth was, as you say, primarily driven by institutional investors that had noted the enormous diversification benefits from managed futures in 2008. Unfortunately, I must say, most of this growth, if not the absolute lion's share of it, was directed towards a very limited number of already very large managers. And this is, I would say, a problem for the industry as a whole. The study that you referred to made by Professor Kosofsky at the Imperial College, simply states, after studying hedge funds over many, many years, that large AUM is positively correlated with past performance and negatively correlated with future performance. And that coincides perfectly with our own research into the CDA world, where it seems like CDAs in general follow the same life cycle as any company. A CDA has its startup phase, has its growth phase. If the CDA has continued success in his performance and the way he conducts his general business, that CDA will increase its assets under management and eventually come or evolve into the maturity phase. And from that point, you would typically see returns and general competitiveness in terms of returns deteriorate. In fact, our studies indicate that large CDAs through the decades, almost without exception, have their best performance behind them, not in front of them. And this is of course distressing for investors. I think that the focus is gradually shifting from only investing with the very large CDAs to finding new innovative talent instead.
All right, thank you. What differences do you see in trading styles and the programs that are offered between European managers and North American managers in general?
Well, there used to be rather large differences. Of course, now we are doing generalizations, but if we go back a decade, I would say that U.S. managers were still very much influenced by classical technical trading, like the old turtle trading. And when the extremely successful European managers, AHL, Winton, Aspect, and similar, entered the scene, they sort of introduced a more scientific and quantitative approach to trading. I think that in general, the trading styles are becoming more and more similar, that there are less differences. Maybe so that the North American managers are still a little more influenced by the old classical trend following or technical trading than the European managers. But we do see some very interesting developments or new managers in the U.S. as well as in Europe.
And in Europe, do you see, in terms of assets under management, what's the growth pattern like there?
I think it has been rather slow in Europe in recent years, with the exception of UK, where institutions have been quite active. We see some activity burgeoning or starting up in Holland, and Switzerland has always been a big market for CDAs. But in general, if you look at Germany, alternative investments in Germany is, I wouldn't say non-existent, but it is certainly not growing. And the same goes for most other European countries. The possible exception also of my own country, Sweden, that has come rather far along the sort of development curve.
And in terms of the European countries where growth has lagged, do you think that's a matter of lack of information? Would better educational and development programs there help the growth, do you think?
I think that the main reason is regulation. Europe, as I guess the situation is here, the same here in the U.S., Europe is undergoing tremendous changes in regulation, and the pace at which these changes take place is rather high. And that means that there is still a great uncertainty on part of investors, especially institutional investors, what they can invest in, what they can invest in 6 months or 1 year. And this certainly puts a lid on their ability to do anything. So regulation has certainly been a dampening force in Europe. And you should also remember that Europe has been suffering badly from the sovereign debt crisis. and that has also certainly dampened investor sentiment. So today we see a tremendous amount of money invested in government bonds, and also in cash, of course, waiting for something to change, for regulation to stabilize, for the European debt crisis to fade away, etc., etc.
Okay, thank you. That's very helpful. In terms of evaluating managers, this is an interesting question from one of my colleagues. How do you differentiate between managers during your evaluation process in a strategy where the correlations at times tend to run fairly high across the managers? How do you make your decisions?
You know, there is no easy answer to that. As always, the devil is in the details. You might have three trend-following managers that historically have been very highly correlated, and then suddenly, for no apparent reason at all, there is no style drift or anything like that, one of the managers start to become more and more decorrelated from the others. And there might be a number of reasons for that. What we do is that we try to go as deep as possible into the very nitty-gritty of not only the signal generation, which is often quite similar across managers, but things like exactly how do you allocate between sectors? Is there a pronounced method for how you define sectors? Or do you have a pro rata allocation process? Does the manager do clustering analysis in order to define sectors and sector allocations? Seemingly highly correlated managers may, at times, differ significantly in their performance due to tiny little differences in the way they allocate between sectors and markets, of course. This was very evident a couple of years ago, where we could observe that trend-following managers that had a very, I would say, old-fashioned or even simplistic method of allocating to sectors. No correlation analysis between markets, no clustering approaches, just a fixed allocation to each sector. They tended to perform much better than managers with a more advanced sector allocation method, for the simple fact that it was just one sector that produced trends, and that sector was highly correlated with other sectors. So sometimes the simplistic approach gives a better result than the more advanced approach. So, there is no simple answer to the question. It's just dig down, understand exactly how the manager trades, exactly how the manager allocates between different markets and sectors.
Thank you. Excellent. Well, we appreciate you sharing your ideas and thoughts with us. We hope to revisit with you again soon.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Thank you.